Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. Starting in March 2003, a phenomenon previously unseen began occurring, registering beautifully on the live seismographs the USGS maintains. They registered in 4 sites in Antarctica, 6 in South America, the Galapagos Islands, Bermuda, Puerto Rico, Mexico, 13 sites in the continental US, 2 sites in Hawaii, 2 islands in the North Pacific, 6 sites in Russia, Mongolia, 9 sites in China, Taiwan, Japan, Korea, the Philippines, New Guinea, 3 sites in Australia, New Zealand, 6 sites in the South Pacific, 3 sites in Africa, Turkey, the Ukraine, Finland, 2 sites in Norway, Greenland, and 1 island site in the North Atlantic. This was global. This shuddering first occurred in March 2003, then 3 weeks later in April, then again in May, and soon formed regular patterns. The global shuddering appears to occur at 12 UTC, when Greenwich was facing the sun at their noon, and at 0 UTC, when Greenwich was in opposition on the dark side, their midnight. I dubbed these the face and dark positions of the Atlantic Rift, the highly magnetized strip of hardened magma running down the center of the Atlantic. The classic signature on a seismograph indicating a quake would occur simultaneously on all the charts. Not all sites registered a quake, although during these global shudderings, a large quake somewhere in the world often occurred simultaneously. On the May 26, 2003 global, there were, for instance, a cluster of 15 quakes during one 15-minute period, from 5.1 to 6.8 in the Pacific and Atlantic, the Ukraine, Borneo, and the Philippines. This occurred at hour 23, minute 35 UTC, considered the dark as it was minutes from 0 UTC. A cluster of 16 quakes during one 16-minute period from 5.2 to 7.3 in Russia, China, India, the Philippines, and Indonesia. This occurred at 1938 UTC, considered the dusk as it was close to 1800 UTC when the Atlantic Rift disappears over the horizon at dusk. A cluster of 22 quakes during one 2-minute period from 5.4 to 7.1 in China, Japan, and the North Pacific. This occurred at 9:25 UTC, not exactly at the dawn point of 6 UTC, but as the southern part of the Atlantic Rift curves eastward, it would be dawn for that particular portion of the rift. Clearly, these were connected, but by what? The Zetas explain, and I quote from Zeta Talk, Surging Magma, written May 30th, 2003. Leading into the pole shift, the Earth comes increasingly into the grip, magnetic primarily, of the approaching planet X, riding up from 32 degrees below the ecliptic at a sharp angle so as to pierce the ecliptic quickly and thus avoid the backwash of particle flows that the ecliptic represents. Where its approach from afar results in linear increase in earthquake frequency and strength, and a linear increase in erratic weather, and a linear increase in polar and glacier melt, at the point where it's rising from the 32-degree angle and floating to the point of passage, there are dramatic and rapid changes. These are best understood if both the Earth and Planet X are viewed as the large magnets they are. Both are aligned with the Sun, where planets with strong magnetic fields, such as the Earth and Mercury, are far enough distant from one another to simply line up with the Sun's orientation. They do so. The Earth and Planet X are both aligned with the Sun, but not positioned side to side, and not positioned exactly end to end, as Planet X has assumed a retrograde orbit, and thus is moving diagonally toward Earth from below and to the side. What is this doing to the Earth? At first, magnetic diffusion increases, where swirling about of magnetic magma causes local and temporary magnetic orientation variance. Thus, for many decades, as Planet X began its approach, and increasingly as it zoomed into the solar system, magnetic diffusion was increasing. Then the crust itself began to participate as the highly magnetized Atlantic Rift is under pressure to remain aligned with Planet X, and not create a greater distance by going around the bend at dusk, or staying at a distance at dawn. Thus we saw the dramatic double global quakes occurring on May 26th at the dawn and dusk points. With both the core and crust resisting the alignment and any weak points in the crust having adjusted on May 26th, this pattern did not repeat on May 27th. Where the crust resists, having many alignment responsibilities outside of the magnetic, and the core resists, having established rotation for many reasons and wanting to continue apace, the liquid magma has more freedom. Thus, by May 29th, a distinct surging of parts of this liquid magma from one pole to the other was evident, the plates at the poles being rocked like grass on the ocean. During this surging, the Atlantic Rift, as a highly magnetized part of the crust and in close proximity to the liquid magma, being a deep rift, is collecting magnetized magma which clings to it. This creates, with every passing hour, a stronger magnet at the Atlantic Rift. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. This second pattern that emerged was what I dubbed the wobbles, where rather than the sharp spiking back and forth, the classic seismograph pattern of an earthquake happening, the pen would trace slower waves up and down. Often these wobbles or bobbles would run for a 12-hour period, between the face and the dark, or between the dark and the face, indicating a period during which the plate was riding surging magma. Quakes did not emerge during the wobbles, but the clear timing of when a part of the globe was rising and falling on magma, like a ship on a bobbling sea, fit with the face and dark pattern of global shuddering. All very logical. The wobbles also seemed to indicate stress points, where a fault was pulling apart or a plate trying to turn. Often a quake would emerge later at these stress points and the wobble would go away. On May 27, 2003, the USGS was asked to address these global quakes, the global shuddering that had just recently appeared that March, never before seen, and was picking up steam. Their answer on June 9, 2003 was evasive, to say the least. Matt reports. Below is a copy of correspondence between myself and the USGS regarding a question I raised a couple weeks ago on the frequent worldwide tremors registering simultaneously on seismographs worldwide, as observed on the USGS website, and he gives the URL. Maybe I am missing something on the detailed response I received. Here's my query on May 27, 2003. Frequently, just like it happened this morning, the seismographs all over the world show frantic activity. What's the reason for that? Occasional calibration? I also realized that your data seems not quite up to date. Let's say comparing that with Red Puma Global Swiss site. And he gives the URL. Appreciate your insights on these two important points. Thank you. And the USGS response, June 9, 2003. Activity on instruments in a large part of the world often means a large storm is occurring, which causes noise on the instruments. I'm not sure what two data sets you're looking at for comparison. You mentioned one URL, but not another, so I can't answer that question. Signed, Lisa Wald, USGS Earthquake Hazards Program, Golden, Colorado. End of the quote. Noise on the instruments due to a local storm? These were global shudderings on every seismograph. By July 8, 2003, a second pass at an explanation by the USGS emerged. Email sent to USGS dated June 16, 2003. How come the quakes that are registering on the live seismograph page like Florida are not on the list? And response from Lisa Wald, dated Tuesday, July 1, 2003. Ray, seismograph info. Hello. Without having seen the seismograph that you're looking at, I could only guess that perhaps the signals that you thought were earthquakes were really some other type of noise, such as local source, trucks, trains, animals, etc., or from communication disturbance like static. A seismic signal has to be recorded on a certain minimum number of seismic stations to be declared a possible earthquake by the automatic system. If it is declared a possible earthquake, then it is further evaluated to make sure it's not just regional noise, or a quarry blast, or a sonic boom, or some other type of source. If it's really an earthquake, then it's located and recorded in the archives. I hope this helps. Signed, Lisa. Lisa Wald, USGS Earthquake Hazards Program, Golden, Colorado. End of the quote. So now we have elephants rumbling past the live seismographs simultaneously around the world? Long story short, the USGS has never addressed these global shudderings happening so regularly at the face and dark points. And this lack of an explanation alone points to the cover-up of Planet X. Not global warming. Not emissions from the sun or sunspot activity. If you can't say anything reasonable, say nothing at all. Underreporting of quakes and Richter size were noted by many. And I quote, I've been scoping the European Seismic Center real-time seismic page for several months. Generally, the bigger a quake, the more readings are shown for that quake. Obviously, more seismographs register it. I sort of got used to the pattern of Richter size versus number of reports per quake. Then about a week ago, July 4th, 2003, I noticed that the ratio had changed. For example, today, July 10th, two quakes in Iran reported at only a maximum of about 6.1, but the number of readings, over 12, previously only corresponded to quakes over size 7.0. The pattern seems to run across the board with quakes being downgraded by 1 on the Richter, which is 10 times smaller the Richter is logarithmic. This evidence may seem anecdotal to some, but it's totally convincing to me. In fact, when I first heard about quakes being downgraded, I thought it was a lame way to try to explain the recent lack of big quakes. Now, I'm not so sure. End of the quote. Well, in fact, this downgrading by 1 full Richter was reported on the message boards. Many found that right on target to what they had been observing. Per the Zetas, this was a way to reduce the possibility of panic, the big fear that the establishment has. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Suppressing the Word, written July 1995. Why do you scientists buy into denying rather than trumpeting the truth? They fear for their jobs, their safety, and the safety of their families. In other words, they're being threatened by the establishment to avoid the subject like the plague. Don't yell fire on a crowded planet. Don't tell people about something they can't do anything about. Don't cause panic. The establishment knows it's there, but fears the chaos that will erupt if the populace knows. Those in the establishment who are knowledgeable are personally planning escape routes and safe places and will disappear when the time comes. Those who are knowledgeable and are concerned about getting the word out are brutally repressed. This is precisely the reaction of the establishment that has caused us to be so very noisy about the pole shift. At least people should be informed. Then, at least, they can make up their own minds if they wish to deny or believe. To ignore or take steps, to prepare or just party the time away. Folks should be given the option, in our opinion. Climatic changes, the heating up of the core of the Earth causing increased earthquakes, torrential monsoons and droughts, and volcanic activity will have many wondering. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The Zetas explained that the Atlantic Rift was increasingly becoming a third magnet on the surface of the globe. The Earth's magnetic field being one such magnet, the magnetic field of Planet X being another, and the length of the Atlantic Rift, a third. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Third Magnet, written June 2003. What stress does the Earth experience when rotation slows and stops? We've mentioned that the core wants to continue to turn. The crust, which has been grabbed by the near presence of Planet X at the Atlantic Rift point, resists. And that this conflict causes the Earth to moan. Normally, the magnetic field is a particle flow emerging from the North Pole and circling round to the South Pole. The presence of Planet X blocks this flow on that side of the Earth, such that the particles shift to flow more strongly on the far side, away from Planet X. When Planet X is close enough to cause agitation and spilling over of the ionized particles that normally group at the poles or around the highly magnetized core of the Earth, these particles flow along under the crust of the Earth until they find themselves captured at the Atlantic Rift. This creates a conflict within the Earth's magnetic field, as it now has yet another magnet to deal with. One is the Earth itself. Two, Planet X, which is aligned with the Earth but moving gradually past the Earth as it approaches passage. And three, the Atlantic Rift, aligned loosely with the Earth, but due to the bulge of the equator, not strictly aligned. The distress a highly magnetized Atlantic Rift has on the surging magma is to create an irregular outgo at the North Pole, where the particles flowing through the core are going straight up and out. But the particles that flowed along the Atlantic Rift are emerging at an angle. Thus, the point where this angular outflow emergence occurs is agitated due to ionized particles under the crust surface in rapid motion. This is an indication that the Atlantic Rift has become magnetized, has gathered the ionized particles that escaped from their normal domain near the poles or surrounding the core. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The distressed and surging magma of the Earth was due to the Earth not being able to act as magnets do, lining up either end to end or aligning side by side. Held in place in its orbit by thousands of factors that nudge the planets into their orbits and hold them there, the Earth could only adjust to the magnetic influence of Planet X. The Earth normally aligns side by side with the Sun, the dominant magnet in the solar system. Planet X was to the side of the Sun, rounding the south pole of the Sun, coming at an angle toward the Earth. Thus, the Earth was torn in two directions, not able to align completely in either manner that magnets desire to do, end to end or side by side. And I quote from Zeta Talk, South Pole Tug, written June 2003. If Planet X, known to be rising rapidly toward the ecliptic at this time, has essentially reached the ecliptic, what effect would it have, as the giant magnet it is, on the hapless Earth? It's now in a position to cause distress on the South Pole, which wants to align with the North Pole of Planet X. Since the magnetic alignment of both the Earth and Planet X are the same, as is Mercury, why would Planet X be causing this distress when close to the ecliptic, where Mercury does not? Planet X is a larger magnet than Mercury and is swinging closer to Earth than Mercury, but the key difference is the angle of approach. Magnets can line up side by side if enough distance is allowed between them for a field to develop, such that the particle flow can move out from the North Pole and around to the South Pole without impediment. Where this field cannot be established due to crowding, the flow will move in and out from the dominant magnet in the area, the lesser magnets trying to position themselves end to end to facilitate this flow. Where the lesser magnets cannot position themselves end to end to facilitate this, due to being held in place for some reason. The magnetic particle flow remains distressed, this distress primarily visited upon the lesser magnet. The Earth, as we have mentioned, has had many allegiances to continue rotation, continue to maintain its present tilt, and the core is still listening to the Sun for its magnetic orientation. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The surging magma resulted in more than global shuddering and 12-hour wobbles with simultaneous quakes. It also resulted in simultaneous volcanic activity. And I quote, July 27th was a significant day when global quakes resulted in quakes of 7-plus Richter in both Japan and Russia occurred. Sunday, July 27th, 2003, Mexico's Popocatépetl volcano shot glowing rock and ash high into the air, triggering a thunderous explosion that panicked some residents in nearby communities. Note that Popocatépetl was on the opposite side of the Pacific Rim on July 27th, when 7-plus quakes in Russia and Japan occurred, but Russian volcanoes erupted in step with the 7-plus quakes there. July 27, 2003, strong quake jolts the coast of Japan. A strong earthquake with a preliminary magnitude of 7.1 shook northern Japan on Sunday, but there were no immediate reports of damage or injuries. The agency said the latest quake was unrelated to Saturday's three major quakes that hit another northern state, leaving at least 420 people injured and hundreds of homes damaged. Sunday, July 27th, July 2003. Brezhmeniya volcano in Kamchatka, Russia's far east, has woken up with a large eruption. Brezhmeniya erupted on Saturday, July 26th at 13 hours 20 minutes Moscow time. End of the quote. In fact, Yellowstone began showing 12-hour wobbles on the seismograph dedicated to watching the caldera's activity. On September 15, 2003, the Denny Creek and Old Faithful seismographs in Wyoming were regularly registering extreme jitters just after 2:30 in the afternoon and running for 12 hours exactly. This was a time when the southern part of the Atlantic Rift was coming into opposition on the dark side of the globe, and Cottonwood Point in Ebenezer in Tennessee and Dell in Arkansas, all along the New Madrid, showed this same 12-hour stress, but at approximately 6 p.m., approximately 3 hours ahead of Yellowstone, which is the three time zones ahead of Pacific time. This is not just Yellowstone affecting the New Madrid, but stress on the North American plate caused by the pileup of plates as the Atlantic Rift is held back, gripped by Planet X and held in place on the dark side of the globe. On September 26, 2003, a global quake so strong it turned all the live seismographs black occurred, accompanied by a Richter 8 and 7-plus in Japan. Then on September 28, 2003, 2 days later, Siberia experienced an 8.5 on the border between Mongolia and Kazakhstan. And according to the Russian Emergencies Ministry, the echo of the underground shocks was felt in the majority of Siberia's big cities. Clearly, if the USGS was going to continue to stonewall, these seismographs needed to be adjusted to be less sensitive. And on occasion, they went down for days, and when they came back, they were indeed less sensitive, and it took more to turn them all black. Why are the globals occurring on one day or during a series of days and not others? Per the Zetas, where Planet X is gripping the Atlantic Rift twice a day at the face and dark, or sometimes the dawn and dusk, this grip is exacerbated by sweeping arms emanating from the Sun. The arms are particle flow bursts that reach out into the solar system from the Sun like long arms and rotate with the Sun as it rotates. These arms are what keep the planets moving in their orbits, all in the same direction, counterclockwise. and I quote from Zeta Talk, Retrograde Orbit, written January 1997. This energy field rotates out from the sun intensely at certain points, like a moving arm, following the rotation of the sun's core, where the matter producing this energy field is located. The planets are in essence swept along before this intense energy field, like dust balls in front of a broom. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Since Planet X is in retrograde orbit and rotation, going clockwise, compared to the Earth's orbit and rotation going counterclockwise, they clash. When a sweep occurs, pushing Earth into the arms of Planet X, this clash is heightened. Notably, on August 8, 2003, a crop circle appeared in some field in the UK, depicting this in undeniable terms. At the center, a circle, clearly the sun, with eight curving arms coming out from it. This was enclosed in a square, depicting four seasons of Earth, each season with five circles embedded in it, with each such circle showing a 23-degree tilt, depicting the Earth's tilt. Based on this crop circle, it was computed that there would be a clash caused by the sweeping arm every 6.5 weeks, and sure enough, this pattern was emerging. When the Earth encountered Planet X in her path on December 25, 2003, and stopped in her orbit, this allowed the dark twin sharing her orbit, but normally on the exact opposite side of the orbit, behind the sun in essence, to catch up. Thus, behind the Earth and held at bay by the repulsion force that keeps large bodies, such as planets and moons, from colliding with each other, it created a complicated clash when the sweeping arms went by. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Whiplash, written April 14, 2004. What is the effect on the Earth, currently swept into the arms of Planet X periodically by the sweeping arms of the sun, when more planets crowd up to the stop sign and halt due to the massive repulsion force issues presented by Planet X standing before them? Planet X is 23 times as massive. This mass not reflected in the mere diameter of this interloper, which is only four times as broad as Venus or Earth, or the Earth's dark twin, all of which are approximately the same size. The sweeping arms normally just propel the planets in the inner solar system to continue their path, counterclockwise around the sun. A nudge so benign as to go unnoticed by man, who assumes this motion and direction due to other factors. It's only when the sweeps create disaster at predictable intervals that man takes notice. The sweeping arm effect only became noticeable in the summer of 2003, when the Earth began rounding the backside of the sun and moving toward Planet X, which was inbound from the outer solar system regions toward the orbit of Earth, where it encountered the Earth on December 25, 2003. The sweeps then had a different pace, as rebounding away from Planet X or standing still or backing up under pressure, the Earth encounters the sweeps more often, as it's not running ahead of them as a normal orbit would allow. Presently, the sweeps have the characteristics of pushing the Earth into the arms of Planet X, which it's avoiding due to repulsion force issues, thus creating the phenomenon man has come to associate with the sweeps, such as strong global quakes, electromagnetic surges creating power outages and magnetic flux, and more falling bridges, separating rails, derailing trains, collapsing buildings, water line breaks, and gas line or fixture explosions. Hopping Planet X toward the Earth a few days later, as its reaction to a sweep is to hop over rather than sweep before the sweeping arms. This causes a second round of quakes and phenomenon associated with sweeps. Now approaches the dark twin, apace, closing the gap, and just months behind the Earth in their shared orbit. What will occur when this dark twin, the equal of Earth in size, is close? It will surely stall in its orbit, but more will occur. The sweeps will now have a ricochet effect on the Earth. 1. The dark twin will first encounter the sweeping arm and will smash into Earth with the gravity repulsion force effect. not only creating a bump, but pushing the Earth prematurely into the arms of Planet X. Disaster Scenario 1. 2. The Earth will then encounter the sweeping arm as noted above and will be swept into the arms of Planet X, bringing Disaster Scenario 2. 3. Planet X will then hop the sweep, smashing it into the Earth as noted above, bringing Disaster Scenario 3. 4. Where the Earth has been reacting to this hop by backing up, it can no longer do this without another crunch from the back due to its dark twin behind it, creating Disaster Scenario 4. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Sure enough, the pattern of global quakes emerged with approximately 2 days between the bump, 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 bump described by the Zetas. For instance, a 1 on July 15, 2004, accompanied by quakes over Richter 5 in Vancouver, Canada, Oregon, Uzbekistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, China, and a 7.1 in Fiji. Then a 2 at the dark on July 17th, a 3 at the face on July 19th, and a 4 with multiple global quakes on July 21st. And the repercussions of this whiplash on Earth emerged, derailing trains, dropping bridges, exploding gas lines, and breaking water mains, often so closely allied with the global quake that there was an undeniable association. For instance, during the July 25th to August 5th, 2004 whiplash, the 1 on July 25th, 2004, accompanied by quakes of a 7.2 in India, 6.4 in Thailand, 8.1 in the South China Sea, a 7.6 in Indonesia, and a 6.4 in Australia. The 2 on July 28th, accompanied by a Belgium gas line explosion and Illinois heaving road, and a collapsing Pennsylvania quarry. A 3 on August 2nd, and a 4 on August 4th, followed by a strong 12-hour wobble. This pattern has continued into 2005 and the present. For instance, a 1 on June 10, 2005, preceded by 12-hour wobbles, particularly in the Wake and Midway Islands in the Pacific. The 2 on June 4, 2005, accompanied by a 7.9 in Chile at 22 hours 44 minutes UTC, just an hour and a quarter until the dark point of 0 UTC. The 3 on June 15th with a 7.4 off the coast of California, causing a tsunami warning, and a 4 on June 17th, 2005. Meanwhile, volcanic activity, the number of volcanoes active at any given time, has increased dramatically. As of March 17, 1998, Volcano World listed 53 active volcanoes as of the last 6 years. But as of January 18, 2006, there were 82 active volcanoes listed on that site as of the last 6 years, an increase of 55% in 8 years. As I prepare the script for this hour on global quakes, there is an announcement on TV that Indonesia has just had a 7.7. I had just checked the live seismographs earlier in the day, and all was quiet, but was expecting another sweep to go by this day. But now the huge black signature of a strong global quake has appeared on all seismographs worldwide, close to the dusk point of 18 UTC. At approximately 17 UTC. When did the quake occur? 16 hours and 58 minutes UTC. There is a relationship, and it's not because elephants are stampeding past all the live seismographs worldwide. As the Zetas warned, this type of stress will continue on the crust as we march into the pole shift. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Swept into Disaster, written January 2004. Quakes will increase. Disasters related to crust adjustments will increase, as though from a cry to a scream. Take the effect of exploding gas lines and refineries, ruptured water mains and dams, collapsing buildings and industrial accidents, derailing trains and collapsing ferries and ocean-going vessels, disconnected or dropping bridges and emerging sinkholes, and multiply them tenfold. End of the quote from Zetas. And did such disasters occur during the period when global quakes, the simultaneous quake signature, appeared on all live seismographs? Remember, these first appeared in March 2003, then a second time in April, then again in May 2003, thence regularly thereafter. Here's what was recorded for the latter half of 2003 on power outages. On August 14th, a massive power outage swept across swaths of the eastern United States and Canada. August 28th, power outage during the evening rush hour created havoc for around 1 million commuters in New York City. September 1st, a power outage blacked out parts of Peninsula Malaysia. September 2nd, power outage left 3 million Mexicans in the southern Yucatan Peninsula without electricity. September 2nd, Finland, Russia, an overnight power blackout in Sydney's business district. September 5th, thousands of homes were plunged into darkness after a power cut in North London. September 23rd, a power outage struck the capital of Denmark and southern Sweden, leaving 4 million people without electricity. September 28th, much of Italy is without power after a blackout sweeps the country. October 6th, a major power failure blacks out the Czech Republic. October 30th, an underground explosion in Clearwater knocks out power for blocks. November 3rd, Edmonton residents, 2,000 homes, plunged into darkness, problems with the buried power cable. November 7th, most of Chile lost power in a major blackout. And what about gas and water line breaks? On July 15th, a gas explosion occurred in Air Gas Company in Sacramento. August 14th, explosion rocked the Marathon Oil Refinery, Michigan. September 13th, South London is without water for a third day after water mains burst. September 27th, St. Louis gas explosion, high-pressure pipeline emptied itself of 3 miles of propane. October 7th, gas main near George Washington University Hospital ruptured, flames shooting several feet into the air. October 12th, several water mains in the Linden, New Jersey area broke. 11 separate breaks occurred. October 16th, water main breaks flooded streets in northern Manhattan, rose halfway up the windshields of parked cars. October 23rd, a water main break flooding portions of Boston's South End forced the closure of several roads. October 28th, gas line broke in Fort Worth, fire at the Harris Hospital. November 18th, a 30-inch water main exploded in Overland Park, Kansas. November 29th, Detroit gas line exploded, leveling the building. November 30th, water main break in Chicago, 80 cars submerged past the hoods. December 1st, gas line breaks twice, 12 hours apart, in northwest Alberta. Fireball 300 feet high. December 25th, monstrous China gas field explosions, dead zone around perimeters. And moaning or trembling earth. June 17th, in Japan, at 3:50 a.m., it's like a moan or a groan, a very loud sound. July 12th, in Missouri, about 11:30. Quote, I noticed the couch was vibrating slightly, the candle flame slightly shaking. 5 times now since March, I've been aware of the trembling or vibrating sensations in Tennessee. September 22nd, Scottsdale, Arizona. The earth tremblings were so acute that I got out of bed and packed an emergency kit. September 26th, for the last 24 hours here in the UK, there's been a strange rhythmic tremor. October 12th. Bumping subterranean sounds heard by many, the Seattle drums. October 12th, heard the drums in Michigan, just west of Duluth, Minnesota, too. November 7th, windows shake and the ground move. There was no earthquake activity in the Danville, Indiana area. November 23rd, Nevada 4.5 with rumbling and hollow booming heard frequently. And what about collapsing structures? May 28th to the 29th, 4 dams break in 2 days in North Carolina. July 19th, roof of a row of terraced shops and a restaurant collapsed on a busy London shopping street. October 18th, tube derailed by broken track, second derailment on the London Underground in a year. October 30th, parking garage collapses in Atlantic City. November 14th, buildings evacuated in Delaware after crack discovered in building. November 29th, Detroit gas line explosion, totaling restaurant. November 29th, fiber optic cable that runs under the Atlantic and North Sea led to the failure of the Internet. November 30th, water main break, Lincoln Park, Chicago, submerging cars. December 3rd, Edmonton, Alberta, gas line rupture in two places, main distribution line, flame plume. December 8th, Toronto Theater collapses, death and injuries. December 23rd, Bolivia span bridge, 350 feet across, reinforced concrete, collapses. December 29th, Norway tunnel break under Oslo Fjord, solid rock. December 27th, Halifax, Canada water main break, throwing rocks, breaking windows, cause unknown. December 29th, fire destroys factory in Cleveland, Ohio, magnesium fuel, out of control. December 18th, Internet telecom line in South China Sea, torn by earthquakes, laid in 1997, was new. And erratic tides. August 7th, Atlantic sudden temperature dive in a midsummer mystery for scientists. September 30th, Jacksonville, Florida. At low tide, there's still 2 to 3 feet of water in the marsh. Always has drained. November 25th, East Coast high tides have been getting alarmingly high. 20 to 50 foot waves in Hawaii, unheard of before. December 14th, Louisiana flooding and not draining. Floodgates remain closed, rising seas. December 11th, Norway storm with high waves forced ferries to close. Worst storm per old timers. Now this was just in 2003. May seem like a lot, and perhaps we don't have that same drumbeat going on today, but weak points break when the stress starts. 2003 was the first time we were beginning to have this jerking around on the Atlantic Rift, which creates a plate pileup behind the Atlantic Rift and stretching in front of the Atlantic Rift. Then if the Atlantic Rift is jerked forward at another point, it creates a stretching to the west of the Atlantic Rift and a pileup to the east of the Atlantic Rift. So it's kind of being jerked around. The periodic global shuddering caused by the grip of Planet X on the highly magnetized lava at the bottom of the Atlantic Rift is a predecessor to the rotation stoppage that occurs the week of the pole shift. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Stop Rotation, written July 1995. As the giant comet approaches, the Earth becomes what might be described as confused. There are conflicting poles, gravitational as well as magnetic. The Earth is normally and magnetically aligned along with the other planets in the solar system according to an axis that exists in your part of the galaxy. Now comes the giant comet from a distance, swinging through your solar system and picking up speed as it approaches. It outweighs the Earth by some 23 times, but by size is not 23 times as large, as its weight is due to its makeup, having less silicon than the Earth, for instance. Should one line these planets up side by side, the Earth would look to Planet X as the Moon does to the Earth, where the gravitational pull on the surface of Planet X is better than half again as much as on the surface of the Earth, accounting for the stocky appearance of the large hominoids who live there. In the tug of war regarding magnetic alignment, Planet X's mass gives it a 4-to-1 advantage. There is no contest. At first, your planet Earth reacts by additional swirling about in matter deep within its core. In the final days, as the giant comet begins passing between the Earth and its Sun, total interference occurs. The Earth slows in its rotation and actually stops. The Earth's rotation is due to the balanced gravitational pull of the neighborhood, and Planet X is a very big bully. The part of the Earth facing this bully is loath to leave, essentially, and this causes the rotation to gradually stop. This is recorded in written history and spoken folklore worldwide as a long day or night. The period of time, due to the lack of mechanical clocks, was not measurable, but the humans who experienced this described it as anywhere from a few hours to several days. The latter is more correct. Rotation also stops because of the magnetic influence of the giant comet, which is aligned according to the larger universe where it spends most of its cycle, has essentially gripped the Earth. The Earth has not yet joined the alignment of the giant comet, but what was occurring before, the steady, slow roll, has now stopped. Planet X grips the Earth, causing rotation stoppage, well before being between the Earth and the Sun. It does so because it is approaching from the south, its north pole to the Earth's south pole, at an angle such that the side of the Earth facing the Sun is more affected by the approach. Thus, while at some distance from the point of passage, it has gripped the Earth to the point of not letting the highly magnetized Atlantic Rift go. During this week, the size of the approaching Planet X horrifies those on the daylight side of the Earth. At first a reddish blob, only a fraction of the size of the Moon, it grows in size and appearance to twist and turn like a dragon in the sky. The ancients recorded this as a fire dragon in the sky, as the tail of swirling moons gave this appearance. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Rotation stoppage causes a long day or long night, which lasts for the better part of a week, 5.9 days per the Zetas. This is recorded in folklore by cultures around the world. Rotation stoppage is caused because the third magnet, the Atlantic Rift, is gripped by Planet X and held in alignment, not allowed to swing to the side around the curve of the Earth to a dusk position, where it would appear as a bow on the surface of the Earth rather than a straight up and down alignment. The side-by-side Planet X as the bully magnet is demanding. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Long Day, Night, written February 2002. The dynamics in place as Planet X approaches during the last few days before the pole shift are such that rotation stops with a predictable part of the Earth facing the approaching Planet X, the mid-Atlantic Ocean off the eastern seaboard of the United States. This part of the globe is centered between land masses that are fairly neutral in magnetic polarization, but lines up over former lava flows from the renting apart of the continents, the mid-Atlantic Rift. The Pacific Trench does not carry the same appeal, as it lies deeper under the water and its characteristics differ in composition from the newer magma that has arisen during continental drift. Magma bubbling up in the Pacific is more diffuse than the magma bubbling up in the Atlantic, centered in the rift. Thus the Atlantic lava beds are gripped, facing the Sun, facing the approaching Planet X, coming up from the south along the rift, and causing both Europe, the Americas, and Africa to be on the long day side of the Earth. Rotation stops with the Atlantic Rift facing the approaching planet, which is coming nearly from under the Sun, but not directly under, so Africa and Europe are turned a bit more toward the Sun than the North American continent. Therefore, the long day described by Joshua and the long night described by the West Coast Indians. There will be no change except that the heating and cooling that occurs during rotation stoppage, except as the atmosphere and oceans distribute heat. Man will not roast or freeze during rotation stoppage as the atmosphere and oceans continue to circulate and thus spread about heating and cooling. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. This rotation stoppage is recorded in folklore worldwide. And I quote from Velikovsky's book, Worlds in Collision. A story is told about Joshua ben Nun, who, when pursuing the Canaanite kings at Beth Horon, implored the sun and the moon to stand still. Joshua 10:12-13. And the sun stood still, and the moon stayed, until the people had avenged themselves upon their enemies. Is it not written in the book of Jasher? So the sun stood still in the middle of heaven, and hasted not go down about a whole day. The book of Joshua, compiled from the more ancient book of Jasher, states that the sun stood still over Gibeon, and the moon over the valley of Ajon. The description of the position of the luminaries implies that the sun was in the forenoon position. The book of Joshua says that the luminaries stood in the midst of the sky. Allowing for the difference in longitude, it must have been an early morning or night in the Western Hemisphere. We go to the shelf where stands books for the historical traditions of the Aborigines in Central America. The sailors of Columbus and Cortez, arriving in America, found there literate people who had books of their own. In the Mexican annals of Quahilan, written in Nashua, India, it is related that during the cosmic catastrophe that occurred in the remote past, the night did not end for a long time. Sahagún, the Spanish savant who came to America a generation after Columbus and gathered the traditions of the Aborigines, wrote that at the time of one cosmic catastrophe, the sun rose only a little way over the horizon and remained there without moving. The moon also stood still. The biblical stories were not known to the Aborigines. Also, the tradition preserved by Sahagún bears no trace of having been introduced by the missionaries. End of the quote from Worlds in Collision by Villikowski. So, folks, this lies in our future, and the global quakes are a predecessor and proof that the Atlantic Rift is the factor that causes rotation stoppage. Global quakes and the 12-hour wobbles that precede or follow them are something that need to be seen for full impact. The USGS does not provide an archive of the live seismograph data, but one can capture this from their website when it presents, and I have done that during 2003 to mid-2005. This data, along with correlating volcanic and quake activity, or correlating earth change disasters, such as derailing trains and exploding gas lines or water mains, can be found in the Global or Sweeps sections of ZetaTalk. Do visit these ZetaTalk website sections, located from the menu at left on the ZetaTalk homepage, to see these dramatic signatures for yourself. And as you view them, remember, there is no other explanation for what presents the periodic patterns, the face and dark timing, but the presence of Planet X. This is why the USGS won't address these signatures, as they have no explanation, and frankly hope, if they pretend it doesn't exist, that you won't notice.
Hello, I'm Roger, President of Troubled Times Incorporated. We're a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping mankind survive during troubled times when self-sufficiency may be the only answer. Our organization offers a twin set CD of survival information at cost to the public. The CDs are in hypertext and PDF format, two popular browser formats, and contain all the information collected by the massive Troubled Times website. The CDs allow you to browse this information offline at your leisure. The cost of the twinned pair is $4.10, and this includes postage. You can also get the survival booklet, a hip-sized booklet of the gist of the Troubled Times advice, for just $5, including postage. We offer a popular combo package for $7.50 that includes both the CDs and the booklet, with the lower postage expense reflected in that price. Send for your copies today to start making practical plans for your and your family's survival. Just click on the $4.10 CD link at www.zetatalk.com and your copy will be on its way.
That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought, those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.